She's also talking about SEM modeling. She's an assistant professor in the Department of Human Development and Family Studies and the Department of Statistics at Purdue University. Sharon?
Good afternoon. I purchased myself a fancy pointer with a timer and seemed to misplace it just before my talk, so this is my pointer, and I have a phone here for time. All right. So today I'm going to be talking about using structural equation modeling as a framework for specifying and evaluating holistic models of health. I would like to acknowledge my collaborators. Most of them hail from University of Miami, Miller School of Medicine, as well as the European Center for Environment and Human Health. And these are the folks that are really asking the interesting questions in health that are driving these research methods, I believe. So many of the examples I show today will be from these colleagues' work. No disclosures, no relationships. I just went to the end of my talk. Okay. Control home doesn't work?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Okay, sorry. You get to see all of my slides. Okay, I'll use the arrows. Okay, the outline. So I'm going to just basically cover a couple of the key features of classic structural equation modeling that and sort of the utility of those. Several of those have been presented during this session and some really good examples. So, and then I want to talk about some of the recent extensions, one of which is the merger of structural equation modeling with generalized linear modeling. Also talk a little bit about the incorporation of random effects modeling in SEM, and we just saw an example of that, random effects modeling meaning multi-level models, hierarchical models, mixed effects models. There's lots of names for that. Talking about, this has come up in the last talk, the sampling adjustments that are available now, and also a simple extension to of those types of estimators to generalized estimation equations. And then I just want to make a statement about what I think the future of this modeling framework is. So what I call classical structural equation modeling with latent variables, I differentiate that from sort of the generalized extension. But the three key features that I think are the most useful are the ability to really measure these unobserved or latent variables, also the simultaneous estimation of equations for path models, as well as the ability to assess model fit or validate models. Now, there's more, I think, benefits that are particular to the software and so forth that deal with missing data, but these, I think, are the three key bonuses to this method. So quickly, just background on structural equation modeling. You can break it up into two submodels. One being the measurement model. This is really the latent variable or confirmatory factor models that we've seen a few examples of. So this is the part of the model that defines the relationship between that unobserved latent variable and its observed indicators that measure it. Then you have the structural model. It's all structural. I'm not sure why that part is called the structural model, but that really is defining relationships between latent variables. So you can sort of break the model up into those submodels. So let me just quickly talk about those submodels and some related things. So first you have this idea of measuring a latent variable. And I think that in the realm of health, there are a lot of really good examples for this. We saw the quality of life earlier. I think that's a classic example for using a latent variable. Disease in general is usually based off a series of symptoms or a combination of clinical self-reported measures. There's no one measure of most diseases that you can just tag someone as they have the disease or they don't. Classic latent variable, it's unobservable, but what we do is we combine a lot of information from several observed indicators to decide whether or not this person likely has a disease. So just to point out this model, so we have the latent variable here, the circle, and it's related, in this case, to four observed indicators, and here's where we're extracting that measurement error, which really makes for a more reliable estimate of that unobserved variable. And it's really just a series of sort of regression-like equations. One of the assumptions of this is that's a unidimensional construct. And I think with the first talk where they were trying to get a measurement model for quality of life having multiple domains, it's sort of tricky to get just unidimensional latent variables. But also, although it is in this model constrained to not have correlated measurement error, you can free up that assumption and allow that. What else? Expected measurement error is zero. That's pretty standard. So the bonuses of this, I think, have been shown. You're able to estimate these constructs that otherwise would not be measurable. We are increasing reliability of estimate, and we are protecting against these biased associations. If you have measurement error in more than one independent predictor, and it's related, your parameters could be biased either up or down. It's not a conservative estimate. You can have over too large of beta effects because you have correlated measurement error. I think that's one of the key reasons we want the high reliability, the ability to have unbiased estimates of associations. Okay, the structural model. This is just sort of a general one I threw up. But really, here we have actually three latent variables, and they're related to each other in this fashion. So this exogenous psi1 is affecting another latent variable, eta1, which is in turn affecting a final latent variable. So this really is a combination of the measurement with the sort of association between these variables. Again, just a series of sort of equations simultaneously estimated. So what I think is nice, you know, one of the great things about the simultaneous estimation of parameters is, well, one, you can improve your efficiency if you have multiple related outcomes and you allow those to correlate. You can often improve your power of that way. The other thing is that you can get estimates of parameters, combinations of parameters from across different equations and different sort of outcomes that you're looking at. So that, and you can do testing across equations. What you have is not only the parameter estimates for the entire model, you also have the ways in which those parameter estimates are related. So you can get really almost exact standard errors in a lot of cases. And I'm going to show a specific example of the simultaneous estimation. I think the most often, the most typical situation where this is used is evaluating mediation. So, for example, here we are, this is an example of a model, and I will actually show you some results from this that we did. But anyway, we're looking at the effect of visual impairment on mortality, both directly through pathway C, as well as indirectly through depression. So the theory here is that individuals who have more visual impairment are going to be more likely to be depressed, which in turn is affecting their mortality. So that visual impairment is not affecting mortality just in and of itself. It also has mechanisms by which it can affect mortality. So we're not only interested in the parameter C, we're also interested in the combination of parameters A and B. You basically multiply those coefficients together to get your indirect impact. So here's a place where we're combining parameters. We also often get these total effects where we would add both the direct to the indirect effect, which is another combination of, in fact, three parameters here. So here's what we found in this example, and we've adjusted for a lot of covariates in these models. We're not showing those. These are hazard ratio estimates. For example, the direct effect of visual impairment on mortality, we did find about a 22% increase in the hazard of mortality for individuals with visual impairment versus those without. We also see that we have a linear regression parameter here going from visual impairment to depression. And that was also a significant effect. The 95% confidence intervals are given in the brackets. We also had depression affecting mortality, a hazard ratio of 1.25 for every one standard deviation increase in that latent variable depression. And down here, we were able to calculate the indirect effect, which was that A times B effect. So we were capturing a 9% increase in the rate in the hazard of death for visual impairment operating through depression. The total effect then of visual impairment was 1.33, so the combined direct and indirect pathways. Here's another example. Depression is a great example of using a latent variable. Here's something that there's no really clinical measure for depression other than getting information on a series of symptoms. In this case, we're using four items from the Kessler scale, and that latent variable fit really quite well. The model fit on that. So, okay, the third feature of classical SIM that I think is really important is, and has been shown here a little bit, is this ability to validate your model. And that's using the chi-square test statistic. Now, the null hypothesis here is really that this sigma here stands for the population covariance matrix, and the sigma theta stands for the covariance matrix of the data that's implied by the structure you've imposed on the data with your model. So really what this test is doing is that, is the structure of this model that I impose on this data, is this a good replication of the population covariance matrix? If it is, we really want to accept this. So this is a little different than most of your tests. We're looking, and that's why we have these power issues. But so that's really a great advantage of this, because these models can get complicated, and be able to say whether it's fitting well is, I think, a validation of your model. So one of the reasons I call SIM a framework is because it really just encompasses a lot of long-standing statistical methodologies. And so I think this framework keeps expanding, and that's what I want to go to next. So one of the limitations I think that was brought up already also is that with classic SIM, you have these normality assumptions. So you're either looking for continuous normally distributed outcomes, or there were some approximation methods for categorical outcomes where you could use a probit, and you basically adjusted your models for that. Okay, but recently, last 10 years, they've started adding the ability to model other outcomes of other parametric forms. So this means combining Poisson, probit, logistic, and in fact, we're also using a non-parametric Cox proportional hazard model on our final outcomes here. So this is what I'm calling, I generally call this generalized linear structural equation modeling, because it combines sort of generalized linear modeling with classic structural equation modeling. So here's an example I took that we published. Here's the citation, where we were again looking at visual impairment. We have two mechanisms this time, two mediators. Now there's several things going on here. We have a mortality outcome, which is, so all of these, this sort of equation here is a Cox proportional hazard model. Here we had count data, so these loadings here were actually Poisson. And so we were measuring disability, assuming that someone with high levels of disability would be more likely to have endorsed higher number of bed days on a higher number of reduced activity days in a given exposure time. We also had self-rated health, which was ordered. So we really have logistic regression here, we have some Poisson there, and we had a Cox proportional hazard. So we had, and then we had linear here. So we really have four different types of models going on simultaneously. And to make this kind of more meaningful, I'm going to show you what we found. So this top graph is looking at the effects of visual impairment. We had three levels here. The reference is no VI in the models previously. And so this was just running a Cox proportional hazard model, controlling for the disability and self-rated health. When you do that, when you control on things that are potentially mechanisms, we got these differences in terms of the hazard rate for death. And you can see that the squares, the line with the squares, are individuals with no VI. The solid line have some individuals with some VI, and the triangle line individuals with severe VI. So you can see the differences over a 17-year period in mortality hazard. When you look at that total effect, which was the combined direct and indirect effect, you find this. So we found much larger differences between those individuals with some and a lot of VI, and severe visual impairment, which we would not have found just running a straight-up Cox model. So you really kind of have this issue with mechanisms that can sort of mess up the really a much larger impact here of visual impairment than you might expect. Let me check my time. Okay, I'll try to hurry here. So the random effects. So in classic SEM, even random effects were used because, in fact, the latent variable measures a variance there. So that's really, so if you think about, for example, symptoms of a disease being nested within a patient, that latent variable is measuring an individual level variation. So measuring individual differences in the disease, but you have a bunch of symptoms sort of nested. So you can conceptualize that already as a random effect. And this was quickly used to do longitudinal modeling in classic SEM, where they're using latent variables with multiple points of time nested within the latent variables. So what you're doing here is you're measuring both an intercept, so a value at the start of the study, time one, and a change in visual acuity over time in this example. And what those latent variables are providing are both an estimate of the average for the sample, as well as individual variations in the start point and the change over time. So that was one way, this is sort of the example in classic SEM where people are using a multi-level sort of a latent longitudinal model. So here's just, I'll just show you what we found. Now here we did eyesight trajectories, and we were using the Health and Retirement Survey for this. And I basically collapse these and look at averages by age group. So, for example, that blue line on the bottom is for individuals who are 80 years old or older. The green line is for individuals who are 70 to 79. So you can see that we've estimated both a value at 1996 and a trajectory over time. Now, every individual in the sample has a trajectory. So you have this estimate of variation trajectories. You can then use those trajectories as variables themselves to predict outcomes or to be an outcome of something. So I'm going to show you an example of that as well. So let's see. Here's exercise for this same older group. It's kind of interesting trajectories there. Okay, so here's sort of my example of a holistic model, or fairly holistic. So again, we're looking at mortality as an outcome. We have several covariates here. This is a conceptual model, not a structural equation model per se with all the details. What we did was we took those trajectory models, and they're actually latent variables in here. So we have an intercept, a slope, and a quadratic in this case that varies across individuals, and we can allow that to affect mortality. So we're really looking at whether steep declines in visual impairment lead to higher mortality risk. Same with exercise, if declines in that are related to mortality. And we're also looking at whether, you know, theoretically we're thinking that the vision trajectories are driving changes in vision are driving changes in exercise. So we have a mechanism there as well. I'll just show you some results. I think it's better to have something tangible. But we did find in this case a significant correlation between the trajectories of visual acuity and exercise for this age group, which is really older adults. We saw a correlation at the start and also in the change over time, and as well as the quadratic effect. So that's really the rate in the rate of change. So if they're starting, if they're falling off more quickly with visual impairment, visual acuity, we saw that they were also doing that with exercise. And then here we just have the effects of those three latent variables, which were measuring the intercept, slope, and quadratic trajectories on mortality outcome, all significant, the confidence intervals there. So complex sampling and correction is really a correction to estimation, and that's already been incorporated in a lot of the software. So this is another improvement where this modeling framework has been extended. This time it's really about extending the ability to estimate complex samples. Now there's this kind of a simple, it's not that simple, but there's an extension that could be used, and I haven't seen, I think GLAM may have GEE capabilities. I don't believe M plus does yet. But correcting for complex samples, you're sort of using adjusting for implicitly for nesting. But it's using a particular form of that nesting, a particular covariance matrix. You could incorporate other forms of covariance matrices in your estimation of parameters using generalized estimation equations, and I think this will be added and used more often. Again, just a broadening of the capabilities within the entire framework. So I sort of see going forward that, potentially we could have a framework for which we could do a lot of different kind of modeling, a lot of different kinds of estimation, and it would cover most of what we would need. And a lot of these features are really adding to our ability to sort of estimate things well, and it's quite interesting. There's another extension that's already incorporated, and it's the latent categorical latent variables, which is also called mixture modeling, latent class modeling. So that's already available in this framework as well. And I'd like to acknowledge some of our funders.